Let me do again a quick review of where we've been together this week. What I've been trying to give you is tools that you could take home, that you could draw on a napkin to show someone else, called napkin graphics. You could draw it on a napkin in a coffee shop and explain it to a friend, that make something very clear very quickly. Because at this point, this level of leadership, you've got so many things going on that you don't have a long time to think about things sometimes. You wish you had a long time to just sit and think, now let's see, what should I think about? But at this point, you have to think about things pretty quickly and try to come to clarity as quickly as you possibly can. So I've been trying to give you tools that in various areas of your life will help you with various things in your life. And we started out with personal. We started out with clarifying anything quickly by drawing the triangle, saying what are the top 3 points, turning on its edge, say what's the benefit of the question, what's the single word, it's forward focus. We had that concept. Then we went to personal. The way to focus your life personally was the North Star. The way to balance yourself was the annual planning calendar. And then we went from personal to team. How to set up your direction for the year, how to set priorities for the next 90 days. Then we went to daily. What's the tools that help you daily? Remember, we talked about in the Asking Profound Questions booklet the questions that will help you make decisions quickly and wisely, and it'll help you solve problems quickly and wisely. Today, I'd like to teach you two new tools, and those two new tools help you look at the future. They help you look at the future 10 years ahead. Now, no one knows what will happen tomorrow. Regardless of what they tell you, no one knows what will happen tomorrow. The Lord may come back. There may be another 9/11. There may be another tsunami in Japan. No one knows what will happen tomorrow. But all things being equal, I'm going to teach you a couple of tools that will help you get a quick view of the future of your organization in a fairly short period of time. And they're what I call the vital signs and the standards. We'll come back and do a summary, but to look at the future, the number one word that you're looking at in the future is actually the word health. You want your organization to be a healthy organization. You don't want it just to be successful. It can be successful, but not healthy. A lot of organizations are very successful. They have a lot of people coming, but they're not healthy. They have a lot of money they're raising, but they're not healthy. A lot of times, we get into periods of time when there are certain parts of the organization that are not healthy. I'd like to give you two tools to help you assess the health of your organization very quickly on an annual basis. The first one is what I call vital signs. And there are actually 7 vital signs for any organization. The second tool is standards. And there are 5 standards. Now, the 7 vital signs that you have for your organization may be very different than the person next to you. It isn't that I've got 7 things that every organization should have, because your organization is like no other organization is. So I'll help you know how to find what your seven are, but it isn't like necessarily like the one of the person next to you. So you've got seven vital signs and five standards. You may be tracking 50 or 100 variables in your organization, but what are the seven that you would most like to show your board of directors? What are the seven that you'd most like to agree with your staff on? But the real key, from my perspective, is not what you show your board or your staff, or the person to whom you report or your staff. The real person you want to show and impress and track for is yourself. You don't want to spend your life making something successful that's not healthy. You don't want to take your life building something only to have it so that when you leave, it falls apart. You want a healthy organization. Now, to get that, let me explain a vital sign. A vital sign is a variable in your organization that you would like to see go up and up and up year after year after year. It may be attendance if you're a church. It may be conversions. It might be income or revenue. It may be number of books sold, number of staff people, whatever it is that you think. Now, let me help you imagine something. Imagine that you're going to have a three-year sabbatical to go study or do whatever you want to do. You got 3 years paid to go do whatever you want to do on one condition, and that is that the organization you're building stays healthy. If you had, at halfway around the world, to get only seven, measure seven things, and they all came back that all seven were going up, which would tell you it's healthy. Giving is up, attendance is up, conversions are up, book sales are up, whatever it is, whatever the things in your particular organization. If they're all up, you say, I get to stay for another year. But if they were going up when you were here, but they start down when you leave, you have to cancel your vacation, cancel your sabbatical, and come home. What seven things would you want to make sure that while you're gone, the staff pay proper attention to so that they continue to go up and up and up? Now, what I'd like to do is suggest that would be your job to answer the question, what are the seven for my organization? To answer it, you can also involve your staff. You can say, you can explain what I'm explaining to you. When the tapes are available, show them a tape and say, if you've got a leadership academy, it's one of the tapes in there. You could show them that. You could show them the tape on what we're talking about and say, what do you, team, think are the seven vital signs of our health? What in our organization needs to go up and up and up and up? And come to seven. Then you say, everyone in agreement? This is sort of unanimous agreement. We're all in agreement. These are the seven vital signs that show that we're healthy. Yep, everyone agrees. Then you show it to your board and say, board of directors, do you agree that this is what we're supposed to be working on? Do you agree that these are the most important things we need to report to you? Yes. Okay, then you've got three-way agreement, the person to whom you report, yourself, and your team. Okay? And then what you do is you track what I refer to as relevant history. You could go back 50 years in your ministry, take an average growth per year, but it isn't relative because you may have had big growth years in the 50s or something, and it has nothing to do with today. But if you'll take the last 3 years, which I would refer to as relevant history, and simply chart those and actually do a chart of, all right, for the last 3 years, here has been what we've actually done. And then you take a percentage of growth. let's say it's 7%. You say our attendance has, we've grown an average of 7% a year for the last 3 years. When you get that average growth rate or average decline rate, depending on which way you're going, then project that out for 10 years. You say, and boards love this. In America, a lot of senior executives, pastors, presidents, etc., come to the board meeting and they say, next year we're going to be great. We're going to do great things. We're going to, you know, and it's like they get all excited and everything, but it's all fluff and puff. What boards love to hear, because I've explained this to a lot of boards, what your board loves to hear is this statement. If we do no better than we've done for the last 3 years, if we just do like we've done for the last 3 years, in 10 years, right here is where we'll be. In 10 years, in 0 years, in 10 years, well, this is the last 3 years, the next 10 years, right here is where we'll be. If we do no better than we're doing now. There's always someone on the board that's a little pessimistic. They'll say, yeah, but we can't keep this growth rate up. Whatever your growth, it doesn't matter. If you're growing 2% a year, they'll think you're too optimistic to think we can keep it up. So you say, well, what if we could only grow 5%? Well, at 5%, we'll be right here. 5%, 7%. And there's always someone on the board who says, hey, what if we could get a good idea? And what if we could go to 10%? And you say, all right, what if we grew at 10%? Where would we be instead of 7%? We'd be right here at 10%. Well, probably right there in that scatter pattern, unless there's some major problem develop, is where, by all means of logic, you should be in about 10 years. Now, pardon me if you're an accountant. If you're an accountant, I ask your forgiveness in the future. Accountants don't look at projecting the future the way I'm looking at it. They look at it like, if you say, give me a 10-year projection on where we'll be in 10 years, they'll say, how many rolls of toilet paper will we use per month for 10 years? How many? What would be our electric bill for 10 years? And it will take them months to come up with where you'll be in 10 years. This way, literally, I've had it happen many times where a part-time bookkeeper or part-time assistant can do everything I'm telling you in one afternoon. It is not a complicated process. It's a conceptualist's view of the future, not an accountant's view of the future. The problem is that most churches and most organizations, their view, the context for all of their decision making, all of their thinking, and you remember I've said before, nothing is meaningful without a context. The context feels like this. Well, here's where we are. Is that good, bad, or indifferent? Well, last year we were here. Well, is that good, bad, or indifferent? Where does it say we'll be in the future? Well, we don't know. That's just where we'll be next year. Well, where were we 3 years ago? Were we here or were we here? Is the line going this way or this way? Well, if we were here, this is good. If we were here, we're coming back. If we're, you know, it's like 2 years is not enough. Now, I'm not saying you have to put together all the numbers like a financial statement for 10 years. All I'm saying is the typical reports that you give your board of what did we do last year with the accounting report and what are we going to do next year is not enough context for a board to make wise decisions, frankly. Particularly to view the long-term future of where we're headed. So, when you get this, here are a couple of things you can do with it. You can say, all right, when are we going to outgrow our facility? When are we going to outgrow our building? when are we going to outgrow our, when are we going to outgrow our building? Let's say you say, well, we will outgrow our building when we hit 150 people. When we hit 150 people, when we grow to this level, we will outgrow our building. Then draw this line across, and we will. If we grow at 10%, we'll outgrow it here, 7% here, and 5% here. And literally, you can project it to the month if you want to. Then you say, okay, but it's going to take us 2 years to plan a new building. When do we need to start raising money and start planning for our building? You come back 2 years, and you say, in this month of this year, we need to start planning this building. You can project nearly whatever you want from these, this view of it, okay? And so you ask yourself, what are the seven things that we want to go up and up? Take the last 3 years, actual relevant numbers, take the percentage, and project it out and see what it looks like. Now, let me give you a couple little warnings. If someone asks you, would you come and be the president of our organization? The first thing you want to do is ask them what you consider to, just sit down and think for a minute, what do you consider to be the seven vital signs of the organization they're asking you to lead? And then ask whoever's talking to you, would you mind sending me the actual numbers in these seven areas for the last 3 years? Then you sit down with some graph paper and graph it out and see what's happening. So that when you go there, you can see what is really going on. I'll show you why. A friend of mine was asked to become the president of an organization. And he called me and said, Bob, what should I be asking the board? And I said, I knew it was a famous founder that he was going to replace. I said, how is the general overall health of the organization? He said, I don't think it's very good, but I don't know. So I told him to about the seven vital signs and five standards. And I said, you know, be sure and chart the seven vital signs and five standards. But before you go to the board meeting, send me your charts. I will look at them, and I've looked a lot, so I will refine it some and send it back to you, and then you can refine it some and send it. We'll pass it back and forth a couple of times, and then you can take these charts to the board meeting when you go, your first board meeting, before you say yes. Because in that case, the last 3 years' numbers actually looked almost like this. It was like you're 3 years ago, 2 years ago, last year. If you can see that if you project the numbers in less than 10 years, it's going to be bankrupt. It's going to be gone. And all of the seven vital signs of that entire organization were headed south. Now, if you don't do what I'm suggesting here and you just take over from a founder, the board will think, everything is going fine until you took over. And when you took over, it went down. But if you'll show them this ahead of time and say, which my friend did, he said, here are the actual numbers for the last 3 years. And if we project them out, here's where we will be. I don't think I can turn it around the first year. I think it may go on down. I think we'll probably have another year slide. Then I think I can flatten it out in the next year. And then I think the next year, I'm hoping the team and I could begin bringing it back slightly and bringing it this way. But it's going to take a couple of years just to get to where we can think about turning it around. Now, he's been in the position for a year and a half. The board has given him, they were very appreciative of seeing the charts. They have been very patient with him in turning it around. It is turning around. But I'm saying if he hadn't done that, it could have been a very different story. Now, also, if you're asked to serve on a board, which many of you have been, will be, are serving on a board, what I would encourage you to do if you're serving on a board currently is sort of under the table, look at the questions. What do we consider the seven vital signs of the health of our organization? You say, I have a question. I'm a new board member. May I ask, what have you been considering the seven vital signs of this healthy organization? And then talk about it for an hour or so. Because the board won't have been talking about it. The board will have gotten caught up in the day-to-day of things. And they'll think, wow, this person is asking good questions. Then you say, who would I talk to about getting the information about what we've actually done in the last 3 years in these areas? And chart it out for the next meeting and say, you know, here's what we've got. Now,
do we need a new chart for each vital sign?
The question is, do we need a new chart for each vital sign? The answer is yes. And what I was about to show you is that when you present to your board of directors just the financials for last year and this year, often I found they will take 2 to 4 hours to discuss the detail of it. They will say, now, how much did you spend for toilet tissue? How much did you spend for lights? Why is that so high? Why did this? They'll go through it line by line. It'll take you 4 or 5 hours just to get through it. What I've found, in answer to your question, partly in answer to your question, is if you will say, rather, put together a sheet of paper. It doesn't have to be a large sheet like this. It can be an 8.5 by 11 or 11 by 17 or whatever size you use, and simply chart out your seven vital signs, which you can typically get on a single sheet of paper, and say a healthy, say mission one, which is the name of your organization. Mission one, health, or healthy, and then have the seven vital signs on it, and show that this year, here's what's happened, and that to say, here's what's the last 3 years, and this year, here's what's happened, green, 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 green. You say, do you remember a couple of years ago, we discussed the seven vital signs of a healthy mission one. I'd like to show you now the progress we've made this last year. You hand out this sheet and you say, as you can see, in this area, we've made progress. We're growing. We're growing actually in all seven areas. Now, someone pointed out in the session this morning that data is not inspiring, but stories are. And I said, here's what you do. You take a video of that illustrates your progress in each of the seven areas. And you present the data, which your board is responsible to manage your organization or to make sure that it's healthy. It's their responsibility to make sure it's healthy. But it may not inspire them to keep going. But then you say, we've prepared, Mr. Church has prepared for us, a quick video of each of the areas of our vital signs, and we'd like to show you that now. And they say, vital sign one. And he's interviewing someone who say, it changed my life, I'll never be the same. The next one says, I was hungry and you took me in. The next one says, I was a pagan and I became a believer. And, you know, it's like you have seven quick stories of actual help you've been or actual experience with that, and they've got a combination of monitoring the health, their responsibility, and inspiring stories of each of those very critical areas. And that would be a great combination. And what I've found is that combination takes about 5 minutes, not 4 or 5 hours. When you show this to a board, even if you include 5 minutes for the video or 10 minutes for the video, the typical response is, boy, that's inspiring. That's great. What else you got? It isn't like, but what's the detail? It's like, it looks like things are going well. What else can we help you with? And when they say that, then you come back and you say, now that you see this is healthy, we'd like to take you up to show you where we're going from here. But I wouldn't go quite there yet. I'd show them this and this. And then when you show them this and this, which I'm about to get to, and then they say, all right, where do we go from here? You go back to, now let me show you the direction our team feels we should head in the next year. And seek your wisdom on it. Seek your perspective and seek your help on it. Okay, so that's vital signs. I saw the value of this concept about 3 years before I tried to teach it to anyone, because I couldn't figure something out. I couldn't figure out why some numbers are supposed to go up and up and up and others are supposed to stay flat. As your organization goes from 100 to 1,000 to 10,000 people you're impacting, not all the numbers are supposed to go up. Like your fixed expenses shouldn't go just up and up and up and up and up and up. And so that's where the standards come in. The seven vital signs, the vital signs show quantity, but you also need five standards to show quality. Now what this is you take the seven vital signs, the five standards, and there are certain things that should remain relatively constant regardless of how large you become. An example is this. The average church in America has a fixed expense of 85%. Jim Cece was sitting in the service this morning. He has a church of about 1,000. I said, Jim, what's your percentage? He said, about 85%. And it's like, I've asked a lot of pastors, about 85%. And what that means is, if this is 100%, what percentage of our total budget should be committed before we start the year? Meaning salaries, mortgage, lights, electrical, etc. And the average church says 85%. That's what I've found over the last 35 years. It usually averages 85%. So what you do, it's like, as your church grows from 100 to 500 to 1,000 to 5,000 to 10,000 to 20,000 people or whatever, should this keep going up and up and up and up? No. Should it keep going down and down and down and down? Not really. It's okay, it's healthy if it stays about 85%. Because you don't want it to be 5%, you've got cash reserves of $2 million or something. You don't want it to be 100% because then you have no discretionary money to do any new programming of any kind. The problem that the Church of America has gotten into, that some of you have been affected by, is that with the recession in America, giving has been down, so fixed expenses for some churches are 105% of their income. There's every year, every month, they're losing money. They're going in the hole because their mortgage, their salaries, everything. So they have to start laying off staff. They have to start cutting back on programs, cutting back on mission giving, cutting back on everything, just to stay where they can make their mortgage payments so they don't lose their building, for example. But as your church grows and grows and grows, or your organization grows and grows and grows, there are certain percentage or ratio that need to stay the same. Some examples would be... what percentage of our attendance is visitors? You may say, well, we want at least 5% or 10% of our Sunday morning program to be new visitors. What percentage of your membership is new membership? What percentage of your budget is fixed expense? What percentage of your budget is missions giving? Goes to beyond yourself. And that percentage, as your budget grows from 100,000 to 1 million to 10 million, you may say, we want to keep international missions giving at 23% or 53% or whatever the percentage is. We want to keep the same percentage. We don't want to keep the same dollar level. So if you keep the same dollar level, it's like we'll keep $50,000 a year going into missions, even though we may be bringing in $20 million. No, you want to keep the percentage the same if you're a healthy, balanced church, okay? And again, I use church not because I think you're all pastors, but it's easy to illustrate from a church that we all go to churches and are all familiar with the church life. So what you do then is you say anything, let's call it 88% to 82% is green. This is green. Then anything maybe 5% more, 93%, 77% is yellow. In other words, anything above it or below it too far gets into a yellow zone. And then anything above that or below that is into the red zone. Does that make sense? And you see your heads. Am I making that clear? So then what you do is you show your board, all right, for the last 3 years on this area that we feel is vital to our values, mission giving or number of youth we have compared to average adult attendance or whatever it is that you consider important. What has actually happened for the last 3 years? And you say, we were going along fine 3 years ago, and we were going along fine 2 years ago, but last year with the recession, our fixed income jumped up into the red. And here's what we're going to do this year in our programming to get it to come down into at least the yellow, if not the green. Our projection this year is that we'll probably still be in the yellow. Now, let me suggest to you that your board does not expect you to manage perfectly. No board expects that you will manage perfectly. But what they do expect is that you know what's going on. And if something goes wrong, you know about it before they know about it. And you've got a plan to deal with it, so they don't have to come up with a plan to deal with it. And they can simply review, refine, and approve the plan you've got. So you basically say, all of our areas are up this year, but in our standards, we've got one area because of the recession that is gone up, our fixed expense are up to 98%. Which means we're not going to be able to add any of the new programs we talked about doing. We're not going to be able to add any staff. We're going to be stalled out for a year because we just can't afford to spend money we don't have or God hasn't provided. But next year we're going to be, you know, and if they know that you're aware of what's going on and that you've got a plan to fix it or a plan to deal with it or a plan to restore it or a plan to expand it or plan the right plan, they will simply listen to your plan and say, make sense? Or I'd suggest you do this. Or look, if that's gotten you some trouble, I'll give a little extra money or whatever. But they just want to know that you know what's going on. But if they come in and they're business people and they come in and they say, How's your giving, or what's your fixed expense? How's that coming? I don't know. I'd have to ask the accountant or something. Wrong answer. What are you going to do about the inflation? How does that affect you? What inflation? I didn't know about inflation. You know, it's like if you don't know what's going on, they get real nervous. And they want to micromanage everything you're doing. But if they can sense that you've got a good feel for the overall picture, and they know that what's really important to the health of your organization, you're on top of, they relax and say, all right, what else have you got? That's when you turn to this chart and say, well, you remember 3 years ago when we talked about our dream? This is the number one goal we've set for the year. Here's the number one opportunity, the number one problem. Here's who's in charge of it. Here's the percentage of time they're going to spend on it. We would like to ask you, we'd like to brainstorm with us, what would you do to move in the direction of that goal? How would you seize this opportunity? How would you help us deal with this problem? In other words, they want to know, they want to help you deal with the future, not just know what's happened in the past. Does that make sense to all of you? And again, what you're looking, the essence here is giving your whole team a future orientation and making sure that it's healthy using the seven vital signs and the five standards. You may track 100 things in your church, but that's the seven vital signs and five standards. Now, let me tell you what I see.
What are the five standards? This fields, green, yellow, and green?
Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. It's what needs to stay in a certain range, a percentage or a ratio. Mm-hmm. That's the standards. Let me tell you the most important thing I think this concept gives you. It gives you a clear head. In other words, out of all the things you're responsible for, what are the things that you consider this is absolutely critical? And then it lets you communicate that with your staff and see if they agree. Because what you feel is critical, they may not feel critical at all. No wonder they're not responding to you. But if you and your staff are thinking exactly the same things are important, no wonder they're responding to you. But if you and your staff think these are the seven vital signs and these are the five standards, and you present them to the board and they say, what? That isn't what we had in mind at all. We thought you were going to do a roller skating rink or a bowling alley or a golf course. You know, it's like, what are you doing starting a church? You know, it's like, we thought you were going to go start a golf course. In other words, if you haven't got agreement at this level with your board and your staff, and if you're not clear in your own mind what they are, you see what that does. It leads to confusion, fog, diffuse priorities. Everybody's working on what they think is important. Now, let me show you another advantage here. Let's say you build an organization for 5 or 10 years. All of this is in place. Your successor comes in and you say, let me share with you what I consider the vital signs and standards are of this ministry and what I would encourage you to keep going. He or she looks at it and says, interesting. When I take over your ministry, we're going to go start a golf course. I'm not going to do any of this stuff. That's an overstatement, obviously, but you hear what I'm saying. If your successor doesn't believe in the same vital signs of vitality and vital signs and standards that you do, is it the right successor? I don't think so. And how would you feel if you came back in 5 or 10 years and the very organization you had started and spent 10 years of your life or 20 years of your life building had started a golf course and was playing golf and that was all they were doing? Because they'd lost what was important. versus how do you feel if you came back in 10 years? And they said, oh, I can't wait to show you. You remember we talked about this, and ever since you've been gone, it's been going up, and it's basically in a healthy range. Then you feel like, ah, they're doing a good job of following through, keeping it going, keeping the ministry keeping on.
When did you come up with 7 vital signs?
The question is, why did I come up with 7? It's an arbitrary number. It's a made-up number. But what I found was 3 wasn't enough. I tried to go like 3, and 3 isn't enough. But 13 are too many. If you get too many, it gets too blurry. And so 7 was a number that I found people could keep in their minds easily. It turned out to be just a good number. And 5, the same way. Someone asked me this morning, have you ever worked with an organization that you couldn't identify the 7 vital signs and 5 standards? I said, I've never worked with one that after maybe an hour of talking about it, we couldn't define the 7 vital signs. I have been with one fairly recently where we could only come into 4 standards. No matter how hard we tried, we couldn't think of a 5th standard. And I'm saying it may not be 7 and 5. It may be 7 and 4 or 8 and 5. But that's where I would start to try to focus. Okay, like I said earlier, the vital signs would be things like, in a church, it would be things like attendance, giving, number of staff, number of people saved, number of baptisms, membership, some of those kind of things that are signs of healthy growth. Standards would be things like number of all the people that attend the first time, what percentage keep coming back? Of all the people that are in church on a Sunday morning, what percentage are in small groups during the week some way? Of all the people who are in the youth group, how many continue coming to church once they're college age? Or whatever ratio or percentage you'd like to, whatever you think of, is for us to call ourselves healthy. This has to be in place, would be some of those kind of things. Now, let me address for a minute measurability. Oz mentioned the other night something about measurability. You can quote me on this as the president, founding president, of a consulting firm called Master Planning Group. In other words, if anyone should know about measurability and planning and be probably rigid on it, it should be me. You can quote me on this. The most important things in life are not measurable at all. And when your board says, no, everything has to be measured, I say, no, Bob Beal, the president of Master Planning Group, the consulting firm, said, the most important things in life are not measurable. You can't measure the smile of your child or the value of your relationship with your spouse or how it feels to connect with God in prayer. You can't measure that. You don't even want to try to measure that. Let me show you what you're trying to measure. What you're trying to measure in any system is simply the last thing over which you have any semblance of control. What I mean by that, let me illustrate. What I mean by that is, let's say you're the Volvo dealership of the world, or the Volvo Corporation, and you've got an assembly line, and then you've got a dealership series out here. And we all know that none of this is really that important. What's really important is when that Volvo comes out, doesn't look much like a Volvo, does it? When it takes a family on a vacation, the family enjoys the safety, the fun of going and seeing new things. The family enjoys being together. That's why the Volvo is important, right? It's the pleasure, the safety, the efficiency, all the kind of things that's why it's important. You don't necessarily try to measure those things. But what you do try to measure is the last point over which you have any control. Let me show you what I mean. If this is the assembly line, where you have frames come in, wheels come in, engines come in, electronics come in, air conditioning systems, upholstery, paint, and you have various steps that it goes through to be manufactured, and it rolls off the assembly line as an automobile that's checked worthy to be sent to the dealership. And you're supposed to have 500 of these produced a day. And you can say, how many we have this year, last year? You can do that as a vital sign. How many cars did we produce in the last few years? That you can measure. The end of your process. And if you're supposed to have 500, but you only have 100 today, you don't start at the front end of your line. Actually, you start at the front of the line, and you go through and you say, how many frames came in today? 500. How many wheel sets came in? 500 were put on. How many engines were put on? 500. How many this? 500. How many of this? 100. There's a problem, obviously, right here. But if you simply measure this on a daily basis, we're supposed to have 500, but only 100 came off. Then you look at what's going right until you find something in the process that's going wrong. At which point, you know, right there is a problem. Now, let me show you a realistic example of this. Let me tell you a realistic example of it. Larry Osborne, who is the pastor of a church in Southern California, told me this. He said, we came to the conclusion that people will put up with nearly anything if you provide a good worship service, meaning good speaking and good music. They'll put up with nearly anything to get there. They'll put up with poor parking, confusing signage. They'll put up with about anything. He said, the problem is they won't invite friends to come. So he said, one whole year, we took a look at what happened in the assembly line of the church, so to speak, from the time the car left the road to come into the church, to the parking, to the new visitor signs, to the drop-off, where you put your children, etc., to the worship service, to the backdoor greeters, to the signage as to where to get your car again and everything, until they left. And we studied that pattern right there for 1 year. And we found that the first thing is we had no signs for where you were supposed to go if you were a visitor in the parking. And we found, secondly, we got that fixed and we said, well, but there's not enough parking. Cars come in here, they look around for a little bit, there's no space, so they just leave. So we bought extra land and got extra parking. Then we found that when a visitor got to the signage where it was supposed to be telling where to go, there wasn't signage as to where does your 4-year-old go, where does your 9-year-old go, where does your 15-year-old go. They'd stand and looking confused when they got out of their car, like, where do we go? New people. And so we got new signs put up. And he said, we studied this for 1 full year. What was the process from the time the car wheels hit our property to the time they left? He said, you know what happened in that 1 year? We doubled attendance by just getting rid of the things that made it hard for people to come. Now, all I'm saying is measurability, you're measuring the last thing over which you have any control. Now, when it goes to the dealership, the dealer has it arrived and passed initial inspection. We put it through the car wash thing. We put it on the lot. We set up the insurance or the sales team. We set up the insurance concepts. We set up the advertising program. And we sold 500 cars this year or 600 cars this year. How many cars did we sell this month? What you're What you're measuring is the last thing of a process, last step of any process. And when you get to that last step of the process, is that going up or down? That's what you're trying to measure. You're not trying to measure the enjoyment, the health, the enjoyment, the satisfaction that families feel, the experience of love. You're not trying to measure those immeasurables, imponderables. What you're trying to do is measure your system, the last thing over which you had any control. And so, like for example, we advertised, we did this. How many people actually came and sat in our pews per Sunday? Well, our attendance, you can measure that per year. By the way, this is something that a lot of people may not be exactly the same in your country, but think about the concept and think about how it applies to your church if you're a pastor. A man named David Niednagel, some of you may know David, he's a pastor of a church in Evansville, Indiana. They did a study to find out how many adults actually attended their worship services per Sunday. And what they did is they had everyone write down their name for 3 months. Their attendance stayed exactly the same, 4,000 per Sunday, attending the worship service. But the point is, they had 8,000 people attend. And what they found was that half the people were gone half the time because of the travel schedules, because of vacation schedules, because of visiting neighbors, because it's like your attendance isn't how many people you have attending your church. Your attendance is how many people attended your church this particular Sunday versus the ones that were on vacation or on business trip or at a conference like this or something. So whatever, in America I tell pastors, whatever your normal attendance is, probably your base is twice that much. So if you have a church of 400 people attending, you probably have 800 people attending. They just don't attend all at the same time. Isn't that interesting? Just a little interesting thought. But does this make sense to you in terms of measurability? And so what you're measuring here is you show an interesting video of missions. You sing a song. You prepare the ushers. You prepare offering envelopes. You prepare sermons on stewardship. It's like there are several things you do to encourage giving during a year, but at the end of it, you say, how much did people actually give? You don't try to measure, did they feel fulfilled giving? Why did they give? You're not trying to measure that. You're not trying to measure what's in their heart. You're just measuring, as we've emphasized this over the year, did it make any difference? Okay. The question is, is there a way to study the interrelationship between the vital signs and if one impacts the other or not? That's a great question. Let me show you something here. I'd like to give you a statement that I'd like to have you at least think about. And that statement is, nothing motivates like results. You don't have to buy it necessarily, but think about it. Nothing motivates like results. What motivates you? It's when you see results of something. It isn't necessarily the dream of it. It's actually seeing the result that happened is very motivating. So one of the things that I have tried to figure out when I get the seven vital signs in place is, what is what I call the primary result? In other words, if I were on my deserted island and could know these seven, that would be great. But what if I could only know one? Because it is probably the leading indicator of all the other seven. If that is going down, we're really in trouble. If the other ones go down, we don't like it. But if that one goes down, we're really in trouble. So when you get your seven in place, you may want to circle one as this is our primary result. That's what the primary thing that motivates people in our church is, this one right here. And then it would be a very fascinating board discussion to simply ask the question, what do we see as, or a staff discussion, actually more than a board probably, what do we see is the interactivity of this? Is there a sequence to it? If this is going right, then this tends to go right. And if that goes right, this goes right. And if that goes right, this goes right. And if that goes right, one, two, three, four. Wait, oh, here we go. Five, six, seven. In other words, you may find that there is a sequence there, but it would depend totally on the organization and what the vital signs are and what the standards are. But it would be a very fascinating discussion to have. But I would try to find what is the number one of all the seven. If you could only know one thing on your deserted island, which one would you want to know? Because that is the primary thing that motivates you. When you get those seven vital signs laid out, ask yourself, what gets me up every morning? Why do I stay at this organization? Why don't I just go back home and raise corn like my dad did or something, you know? It's like, why am I here? And the thing that's the number one reason you're here should show up somewhere on here. And when it does, then you can feature that in the church too. You could sort of talk about it more, feature it more, do videos on it, do whatever you want to tell stories about it, get people excited about it, because if they get excited about this, they get excited about everything. Good question. Other questions? Let me take just a minute and explain a marketing concept to you that this question reminded me of. As you're carrying out your various ministries, your various services, your various programs, all of them are not created equal. What I mean by that is some of them have a lot more user acceptance. They're a lot easier to get people excited about than other ones. They'll get excited about youth programs, but not necessarily about aging programs, or aging programs, but not necessarily about... In other words, there's something in your ministry. If you've got three or four or five or six or seven programs you're working with, matter of fact, in your mind or on your paper, make a list of all the programs you have available through your department, your division, your organization. Make a mental note, just make personal notes while I'm talking. What are the four, five, six, seven programs that you're trying to launch or get people involved in? Okay, you have them in your mind? Yes? Everybody have them in mind? Am I talking to myself?
No.
You all have them in your mind? Okay, what I would I tell you a quick story. I was working at World Vision in 1965, and this happened. Let's see when. No, is that 60? It isn't important. Probably 1975, and I had developed a little money container in the shape of a loaf of bread. We called the Love Loaf. And it was sort of like this. It had an ichthus embossed in the top, and in the ichthus there was a little slot for coins. And what we used it for was to have parents teach children about international hungry children, and like that they'd put it on their dinner table, and then every day everyone in the family would put their pocket change in it, and then at some point would bring it back into the church and give it as an offering. It's gone on, by the way, to raise over $100 million. It's raised a lot of money. But I was working on this. It was getting going well, so it really didn't need me all that much. But I had two or three other programs that I had developed that were sort of coughing their way along. They were just sort of chugging. They weren't going really well. They were just sort of sputtering. And so I went into my manager at that time, and I said to Paul Van Os, I said, Paul, I was probably 30, 32 or 33, and he's probably 53, just to give you some age perspective. I was probably 33, and I said, Paul, I want to turn the love loaf over to someone else. And I want to, he said, why do you want to do that? And I said, because it's obvious it's going to go. But these other programs, I feel like I'm not giving enough time, so they're not going as well as the love loaf. And he said, Bob, sit down for a minute. And I did. And he said, Bob, when you came up with the love loaf idea, none of us, not one person in the building, believed in it, including me. He said, you stayed with it. You convinced us it was right. Now everyone sees that it's right. But he said, you're too young to have perspective on the fact that a love loaf doesn't come along every day. This is an incredible idea you've got here. And frankly, it insulted me when he said it, but he said, frankly, the other programs you've developed are not of the same potential as the love loaf. And he said, what you want to see is that you want to see the love loaf as a rocket, like a moon rocket. And in my mind drew a picture that was like, I saw this moon rocket immediately, saw this moon rocket, and you can tell why I'm not a rocket designer, but I saw this moon rocket called the love loaf. And he said, what you want to do is see that as a moon rocket, that when it goes off and it goes into orbit, it can take all those other little programs you've got. If you can find a way to attach them to the love loaf, it can take all those other things with it. There's a phrase in America, Mama didn't raise no fools. And I said, well, Paul, Mama didn't raise no fools, thank you. And I got up and walked out, and I stayed the director of the love loaf program the rest of the time I was at World Vision. But what I began doing was tying everything to the love loaf. Now, to give you a specific example, we had a group in Michigan called the Sherwood Singers. And they were a very good group of musicians. But in Southern California, some Southern Californians, and I lived there for 23 years, so I'm not casting stones at anyone but myself, Southern Californians think, unless it came from Southern California, what good is it anyway? It's like, we're the center of the universe. That nothing good comes from anywhere but here, you know. What good can come out of Rome, is it, or something like that? So we had the Midwest director, Jim Franks, call the home office in Monrovia, California, and said, I'd like to bring the Sherwood Singers to Southern California to sing in some churches, to expose them, to get them some exposure. Well, we all knew they were good, but they weren't Southern California. And so the guy that was in charge of it called 13 churches, and he got 13 no's. Southern California church having a Michigan group come and sing? Are you kidding? No. Sorry. So then he came into my office sort of whining and crying and saying, I can't book anyone. I'm tired of trying to get these pastors to go along. Then I remembered this concept. And I said, I tell you what, Augie, let's do this. Let's teach the Sherwood Singers about the love loaf. Tell them what's been happening with the money that the love loaf has brought in, and then call the next 13 churches and tell them, call the churches that have the love loaf and tell them, we would like to have a group come and give them a love loaf report. And the group is called the Sherwood Singers, and while they're there, they'll sing for you. The next 13 churches he called, he booked 12 churches. Now, it was the same group, but one was tied to something that was that everyone wanted. They wanted a report on, we gave money, what happened to it? It was tied to the number one program. And I say, of the programs or ministries you have, again, what's the interconnection? What is the one that you think has the very most potential of all? You're just convinced this is the rocket. This is the one that could really go. This is the one everyone likes, everyone talks about. Whatever one that is, try to tie everything else you're doing to it and see what happens. Not interesting. It's like, well.
Can you indicate, I mean, it's typically used immediately, but for principle, can you identify seven vital signs of a moon rocket?
I'm sorry.
Is it possible, I mean, do you see it as feasible and indeed desirable to identify seven vital signs related to the moon rocket?
Yes. The question is, can you identify seven vital signs in relationship to one program? Yes. You could take any program and put seven vital signs and five standards with it if you'd like to. But that report may not go to the board of directors. It may be a subpart of the seven vital signs and five standards that go to the board. The board is interested, should be interested, in the largest picture, not all 100 charts you're keeping or 100 stats you're keeping. They should be interested in just the biggest picture of the organization, unless it's some extraordinary program. And then let's say, for example, the board says, all right, we've got the board may say to the president or the senior pastor or whoever, this is very exciting. Everything is up. By the way, Mr. President or Mrs. President or senior pastor, this is all very good. You're doing a great job. But how is the Love Loaf program coming? At which point you could say, well, the next board meeting, let me have Sam come in and give you a report on how the Love Loaf is coming. At which point, you could do the seven vital signs and five standards just for the Love Loaf if you wanted to. How many loaves did we distribute? How much money has come in from it? How many churches are involved? How many families do we estimate are giving? And then you could say, what's the average income per loaf? And you know, you could do the seven vital signs and five. Is the Love Loaf program healthy? You could do a special report just for one program. Yes, you could. To summarize where we've come together this week, what you want as a leader, and particularly as a president or senior executive, general manager, senior pastor, etc., is a few tools that will help you get mental clarity as quickly as you can, or restore mental clarity as quickly as you can, because you get so busy at certain seasons that you sort of lose track of where you are. And you need certain tools to get back out to refocus your thinking. One of them is your personal focus, the North Star. One of them is your personal balance. Where are we on that? Then to focus yourself personally, focus your team in terms of, does our team have the right direction? Has it got the right priorities in the short term? Right direction for the year, the right priorities for the next 90 days. On a daily basis, Have I got decisions that need to be made for the staff that I haven't made yet? I better make those, or certain problems we have to solve. But one thing you want is a really clear look at a longer-term future. That you can get by projecting your seven vital signs and by defining your five standards in terms of what will help make your organization healthy. Because you don't want to do all this and have a successful organization that isn't healthy, because that's not a good witness at all. And that leads to what you were saying in the very beginning, where when your visibility exceeds your ability, it destroys your credibility. And so you don't want your visibility to be huge and your attendance to be huge, but your ability to deliver services to that group doesn't match the size of the group, and it destroys your credibility. You want a healthy organization, not just a big one. Now, I want to say to you that as a group, I appreciate your coming this week and the time we've had together. Many of you have been here each session. I say, we may never meet again in this life. That's just reality. but I wish you Godspeed in what you're doing, because I really respect the sacrifice you're making, the commitment you've made, the work you have, all you're doing. I just hope that the tools that I've taught you will help accelerate your ability to get that done, and that they're simple enough that you can teach them to your disciples when you get home, to your proteges when you get home, and that they can go on helping your ministry until the Lord returns, or as long as your ministry is on the earth. Thank you again for coming, and wish you the best.